Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello, and welcome back to the show. Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Hello, Taylor, doing good. How are you doing?
I am doing just fine. It's February 1st, so to anybody that did the Dry January, great job.
Yay!
You did it, right?
We made it, both of us. I dragged Mom across the finish line with me.
Was it a 100% Dry January? No slip-ups?
Yeah. No slip-ups. As a matter of fact, though, Mom was so sick for the last 2 weeks, I think she didn't have to work too hard at it.
Right, that's good. She
was under enough medication, she didn't need to drink, too. You know, NyQuil and bourbon don't go well together.
Well, to each their own. Did you have any drinks this week? Obviously not alcohol, but anything else that you enjoyed?
No, I can't say that I did.
No.
Just the regular Propels and coffees, you know, espressos, but not espresso martinis. I've still got a big jug of espresso martinis that have now aged for a month that I get to try maybe this coming weekend.
Oh, that is nice.
After we see what that furry bastard says tomorrow, if we're going to get rid of the winter and get some spring in here.
Oh, is that that is tomorrow, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. The old gopher.
We are halfway to spring.
Halfway, huh?
Or it's like, what is it? Today, February 1st, is between the winter solstice and the spring equinox, I think.
Okay.
We are on our way out of the darkness.
Good.
That. Yeah.
Instead of winter is coming, winter is going.
Yes. There is some pagan celebration associated with that. I believe it's called Imbolc. It means in the belly. It means that the earth is, something is growing again. Things are starting to grow.
Mm. Well, we dodged two bullets. So we had two, like, ice snowstorms come by, and one went just north of us, and the other went just south of us, and we just barely caught just a little bit off the edge.
Yeah, I kept hearing all those news stories about the severe weather, and I'm like, what does that mean for me? And it got a little cold. It got the 30s here, but it's going to be back.
You didn't get the snow, though, huh?
The week. Nope. I think it snowed last night.
Yeah.
I was out for a walk this morning, and I saw some snow remaining in, like, you know, like on top of places it can gather, like garbage bags and stuff. But I was very confused by it at first. I'm like, it didn't snow, or did it? Because otherwise it was completely gone.
Well, that's good, because some of your fellow New Yorkers in the Buffalo area, they got a lot of snow over the last month.
Yeah, well, that's a whole different story. That was pretty bad.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're on our way out. That's what matters.
The spring
will be here before you know it.
Step into the light. Step into the light.
It's coming. January is always the hardest month for me. I feel like, you know, the post-holiday, and then it's January, and I'm like, what is this about? This one just sucks. Once you get to like February, March, it's like, okay, it still sucks, but we're on our way out. That's all right.
Yeah. I feel like Christmas was like 6 months ago.
Yeah. Well, last week, which feels like last week, we talked about.
And on the third day, which felt like 4 days.
This episode is going to be a little continuation from last week. Of course, last week we talked all about the history, the career of Sam Ross, a prominent, still very much with us figure in the New York bar scene during the cocktail revival period of the early 2000s, and some of his signature cocktails. We talked all about the penicillin, and the one that kind of matters more today, we talked all about the paper plane.
Yeah, we had some feedback on the Facebook site that said, they were surprised. They were listening to the podcast, and they had just made up a big batch of penicillin when we started talking about our topic and say, you were talking about it as I was drinking it.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Sometimes when we talk about drinks, all I can think about is like, I wish I had the foresight to like have one with me while we talk about it, because that's all I can think about now is how much I want that drink. So I'm glad it worked out for you.
Yeah, that's right. Perfect timing.
Well, the paper plane, it's more or less an ingredient swap last word. It's got bourbon instead of gin, lemon instead of lime, and in place of maraschino and green chartreuse, you've got Aperol and, sort of focus of today's show, Amaro Nonino. Amaro Nonino Quintessentia is the full name, but usually we just call it Nonino, which is how I've always been introduced to it. But now, I mean, we're going to go today into the history of the big family brand, because Nonino is actually the family name of the entire series of Nonino products. And so I feel like maybe it works in America, but probably in Europe it's a bit of a faux pas to refer to Amaro Nonino Quintessentia as just Nonino, because lots of things are Nonino.
Yeah.
It's a big, huge family brand. Just get into it.
I know that's one of the things that I overlook a lot when we're talking about things, is I forget that I'm looking at it from our American view. And when you look at it, there's a lot of people that see the same things, and they, you know, it's totally different to them because of their view of it. And, mm-hmm. you know, to me, hell, I'd barely heard of it. So you call it Amaro Nonino Quintessentia, you could call it Nonino, it'd be the same to me. But there's a lot of people with a lot of different view on that.
Yeah. Well, and even like, and we know, as we go into the family story and how recognized they are, like, I mean, really internationally, like, it's surprising to me that I didn't have any concept of like how impactful the Nonino brand really is. So again, that's one of those things where, you know, when you just have the viewpoint of the American marketplace, it's like, oh yeah, this one Amaro got really big because a prominent bartender based in America used it. But it's like, well, that's mm-hmm. nice. That's nice for this market, but they already had conquered an entire other market.
Yeah.
All right. So to get to the sort of origin point of Nonino, Nonino, yeah, it's a family name, and it dates back to 1897. It was founded by Orazio Nonino. That's when he had his first permanent distillery in Ronte di Pavia. Now, up until then, he'd been distilling before that, but he'd run a mobile operation, which was actually sort of the style at the time. You know, we talked about, he distilled grappa, and we talked about grappa before. You know, started out as sort of a poor man's booze.
Right.
So he would just, you know, wheel his still from house to house to gather the pomace, the leftover bits from winemaking, and then he would make that, you know, he would process it with his mobile still. But then he had it by 1897, he had enough, you know, success, enough know-how that he decided to set up a permanent distillery, for his grappa.
Yeah. I keep thinking of like, he's got it set up in the back of a sports car and outrunning Boss Hogg so that Boss Hogg doesn't get him and bust him for having a still.
I don't think it was quite that. I think it was perfectly legal at the time in Italy.
That's the West Virginia version of it.
Yeah. But it was, you know, it was a very rough operation at first. But, you know, he takes a step to set up a permanent distillery to sort of give some structure to his grappa making. This continues for generations, making grappa in sort of a simple ancestral style. This goes on this way until like 1928. A marriage in the family sets the stage for what will kind of become part of the Nonino legacy, and that is kick-ass women doing cool stuff.
Well, I like kick-ass women doing cool stuff.
Well, yeah. So Antonio Nonino, who was son of Vigi Nonino, so we're, you know, a few generations of Noninos making grappa at this point. Antonio marries Silvia Milocco, who takes it upon herself to learn the art of the family business. She wants to know how to distill, and she becomes the first woman to produce grappa at this level in Italy. And her and the two of them like have a good like they work together. Like her husband also starts to branch out Antonio into making what would also become an important part of their legacy, liqueurs and amari. So using their grappa as a base. So he's the first one to experiment with an amaro. He comes up with what he called amaro carnia, which is made from herbs of the local mountains, the Friuli Mountains, and they include ingredients like orange and gentian and licorice and rhubarb, saffron, tamarind. This is all stuff that will eventually come back and be the recipe for our modern Amaro Nonino quintessentia. But he's the one that sort of began that recipe back in the early, you know, 1920s. Mm-hmm. So he lays the groundwork for what will become Amaro Nonino. And likewise, his wife, Sylvia, she becomes the operator of the distillery after her husband passes away. That happens in 1940. This also, again, cements her as the first woman to run a grappa distillery. Not only is the first woman to distill it, but now she's the first woman to own and operate a distillery. And she also sort of continues this investigation into liqueurs and amaros. She invents her own aperitivo. She calls it Aperitivo Bianco Nonino. And it utilizes, it's actually really sweet, I think, because it utilizes a lot of the same herbs and botanicals that her husband utilized in his recipe, but it's a little bit of a lighter take on it. It's a little bit more floral. It's a little brighter. It's an aperitif instead of more of a digestif. And it's like a feminine compliment to her husband's carnia. It's just very sweet. They each, that sounds like love to me. Like, I made an amaro. I made a complimentary amaro. That's beautiful.
Well, it is pretty cool that, you know, she wasn't trying to outdo him. She was trying to find something that was a compliment to it. So,
well, this was after, you know, he passed away. So, you know, she was sort of continuing his work, you know. Mm-hmm. That's really sweet.
Yeah.
The two of them had a son, Benito, who carries on a couple of the family traditions. He continues to make delicious grappa, but also he marries a cool lady in 1962. And that is Gianola Bulfoni, who's a very important figure in the history of the Nonino family. There's a description of her in one of the articles I found that described her as like, she's like 5 feet tall, like even, just a tiny lady, but let in, very intimidating, very powerful presence in a room.
Sounds like your mom's mom.
And, yeah, sounds like, mama. And yeah. She's also very much a visionary. So, you know, the distillery had operated successfully, but very much like in this simplistic old school way up until then. She's the one that really led the charge to update the distillery's equipment. And also, she's the one that proposes the idea of using fresh pomace instead of just old, like, whatever the wineries have to give us. And, you know, this is a step we've kind of encountered in other other spirits histories. Like, when we talked about rum, like rum agricole, mm-hmm. how it kind of, originally rum was made from a byproduct, right? Like, you process sugar cane, there's a leftover sludge, we figured out how to ferment rum from that. But it was always made from a secondary product. And then the people that invented rum agricole were like, what if we made it fresh and for the production of rum instead of from a byproduct? So right. She has that same thought when it comes to grappa.
Yeah, instead of being a leftover, what if we started with it?
Yeah, like make the product for the product, not a byproduct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so she starts having like fresh pomace be used in the distillery. And that was really the ticket to taking the business sort of to the next level. She was also the first to tinker with the idea of single varietal grappa. It's just, you know, kind of like single malt scotch, you know. This is like, we're using this single grape, and we're using it, this fresh pressed pomace, to produce our grappa, which was a very revolutionary. This was in like the 60s, like 1967, specifically when she first introduced a product with this idea in it. Up until then, it still had this reputation of being like grappa was a poor man's spirit. Grappa was not something you mixed with. It wasn't something that was meant to be aged or an expensive bottling. And she completely switched that up. You know, she had it, you know, bottled in like beautiful, like sort of bulbous, perfumey looking bottles. She, her eventual release, because she kind of experimented for a few years until they landed, the official launch was in 73, but like she hand signed each bottle. She sent them to politicians and celebrities, kind of way ahead of her time as far as like running an influencer campaign goes.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder how many likes she got for that.
Well, I mean, enough, because it like launched this entire idea of grappa as a high-end spirit, grappa as a single varietal spirit, like the opportunity in a higher-end market for the spirit.
Well, I thought it was pretty cool that she decided she wanted to elevate the product, and she got the idea that a single varietal of grape would be better to produce this high-end grappa as opposed to the mixture of whatever husk they got, whatever the varietals are. But when she approached any of the local farmers about them separating them out and giving her just the one varietal, they all laughed at her. We're like, we're not going to do that. That'll slow us down. We're not going to do that. So she, in trying to figure out a way to get around it, the way she did it is she kind of went to the back door instead of the front door to talk to the wives instead of the farmers and said, look, here's what I want to do. Can you help me with this? I will pay you well. And she offered to pay them more for the single varietal than what they were paying for the mixed varietal. So the wives decided that was a pretty good deal, and she got them to go to work for her getting that.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's smart.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty ingenious of her.
Yeah.
She knows who runs that family.
Well, I mean, she was running hers at this point, you know, so
yeah,
she understands.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and that, I mean, that idea, like, that was a, you know, a game-changing idea, and it led into one of the other things that she's really, like, strongly credited for, and that's the preservation of indigenous vines in this region of Italy. Because if you design a business that kind of depends on these single origins, these local vines, the first one she used was a Picolite, which is a indigenous grapevine to Friuli. You know, she started researching, like, what are other local, like, they originated here vines that we can make single origin from? And what she found was a lot of these vines were starting to kind of, like, go extinct because they weren't legally allowed to be grown anywhere because of certain legislation that banned their own planting in their homeland in favor of more like commercially successful vines. So she successfully petitioned to have these rules overturned and allow these vines to be replanted and proliferate in their, you know, home ground.
Well, I think that was a, you know, a long range view that she took of it, instead of a lot of people were being short ranged with it and using up their resources. And she was saying, look, we got to look down the road, and this is better for all of us.
Yeah. Well, and she also set up something called the Golden Vine Shoot Award. This was in 1973, which specifically would honor and like raise up local growers who would cultivate native vines. I think it's like she's clearly a savvy businesswoman. Like, she knows that ultimately this will benefit her, but it's a good cause, and also she's making it like it will help people local to her to like get in this preserve a local culture. Preserve local vines. We'll all benefit from this. We'll create an identity with this, which is really cool.
Well, and then creates a friendly competition so that then people kind of maybe have a little bit more of a desire to get involved in it.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that goes on, like, kind of just expanded on that idea. By 84, Nonino began producing just a whole grape distillate, which you can't call grappa because grappa is made from, you know, that pomace, that leftover stuff. Even if you're, you know, you making the leftover stuff just to make grappa, it still has to come from that. So they make a whole grape distillate, and, you know, it gets it is served up in these beautiful, like, hand-blown glass bottles made by a master glassmaker. It's kind of art in and of itself, the way they release these bottlings. And, I mean, I don't know, they basically created a new category of alcohol. Single grape, whole grape distillate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the other had just used the mixture of whatever was left over.
Well, it was the mixture, it was already pressed. So this is like, we're using like the everything in the grape to distill from.
Mm-hmm. So then they must have gotten them and done some of their own squashing, huh?
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, it makes a completely different product. You know, that's why it's like, it's registered as a grape distillate. But it's an entirely different product. And now up until this point, the base of their Amaris had been their grappa. But this creation of this grape distillate will come up again as far as their Amaris are concerned. But that needs a new generation of Noninos, and that is the children of Gianola and Benito. They have three daughters, again, continuing the tradition of awesome Nonino women. They have Christina, Antonella, and Elisabetta. And they both become part of the brand image, like when they become of age. Like, there's a lot of advertising that centers around their three daughters, just kind of upholding the family traditions. Mm-hmm. But also, like, they also become part of the idea factory, and they're very hands-on. Like, they were given a little... The way they describe it, it sounds to me like baby's first distillery. Like, here's a distillery for you three girls. Like, have some fun. Distill some spirits. Where was my distillery when I turned 21, Dad?
Where was mine? I didn't have one either.
That's fair. But they were very hands-on in the creation and understanding the techniques. And that this generation of Nonino women are the ones that finally service up our current Amaro Nonino Quintessentia. So in 92, they go back to that original recipe by their grandfather, and they take that same herb profile. It's mainly secret, but we know a few of the things in it. They take that herb and botanical profile. They use that grape distillate instead of the grappa that he was using. So they use this, you know, far more nuanced, far more richer grape distillate as their base.
Mm-hmm.
And they make Amaro Nonino Quintessentia in 92, release it on the market. Totally, you know, honoring their family, honoring their grandparents' spirit that also just, you know, ends up in the paper plane and becomes a big deal.
Well, I like the way that, you know, you've got some generations that would just come along and just enjoy the spoils of what their ancestors had done. But each generation came along and came up with something to grow it and make it a little stronger, you know, in what it was doing. And that's good that's the kind of, you know, family fervor that you had towards their product that they had.
Yeah. Well, there's a real reverence and for the, you know, the family legacy. Like, you can't know what goes on, and you can only, like, you know, read the press releases and the articles and there's a lot. There's books written about them. There's a comic book written about their family. There's a lot of information there. But, you know, it seems just by the consistency of the business that they've got some strong, like, you know, care to the brand. It's not just a brand, it's a family, which I think shows through.
Well, I kind of like in this one, you know, a lot of times the research we've done, we're talking about people in the 1700s and 1800s, but this one, a lot of it was fairly recent history. And I like that kind of, it's like when we were talking about it last week, Elisabetta, that you named as one of the three sisters, she was the one that thanked Sam Ross for popularizing, you know, the Amaro because they were using it in the paper plane.
Yeah. So. Well, and... Yeah, and they would also, the three sisters would also honor their grandmother Sylvia's recipe, that aperitivo that she made, as sort of this, after she lost her husband, she made this sort of feminine compliment to his Amari, and then they brought back her recipe in 2018, sort of reformulated it, and made L'Aperitivo Nonino Botanical, which is delightful. I also love the label design. Is really sweet. It's got these sort of very like abstract three female figures on the label, you know, kind of both representing the three daughters, but also just sort of the strong like legacy of Nonino women. Just I feel like it's just I'm getting choked up about a liquor brand, but I think it's very sweet that, you know, these grandparents, they had their little love letter Amaris to each other, and then the next generation, the two generations later, they bring these back to the market, and it's really cool.
Yeah, that is cool. I think that's a great story, and I guess that you know, it's got a bitter finish, if I understand right. It's got that anise type finish, and hers is probably a little bit sweeter. Doesn't have the bitter finish the same. Would be the distinction. I think that's a good distinction between grandparents. The grandpas are a little more bitter, and the grandmas are a little sweeter.
See, I don't know, because I've had both of these, and I think it's a little bit more nuanced than that. It's that the Nonino, Amaro Nonino, the Quintessentia, it's a little bit, I would say robust is the word I would use. It's both more bitter and more sweet, whereas the Aperitivo is a little lighter, a little bit more floral, a little brighter.
Okay.
So,
well, I've never had either one, and I didn't realize until doing the research and seeing a picture of the bottle, we have one in our liquor cabinet, and I didn't know what it was.
I got that for one of our beach trips years ago, and it got, I obviously couldn't bring it back to New York, so it got packed up and brought back home with you. You just had it. So good. There you go. You've got some age now.
Yeah.
You've got some Reserva.
Does that make it better?
Which is an actual product. Well, not probably sitting in a clear glass bottle, but they have, I mean, man, when we talk about like the product line that they have now, they do have a Reserve Nonino Quintessentia, which is barrel aged. It's won a ton of awards. But I mean, beyond that, they have, the portfolio is massive. Like the three daughters, they dabbled in honey distillates, and they've released a line of like single source honey distillates, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. So, you know, spirit distilled from honey as the fermentable sugar.
Right.
They have a ton of special edition grappas. They've continued on with those, you know, single grape grappas, the aged grappas. They've got, I mean, their older bottles go up for auction at absurd prices, not just because of the spirit inside of them, but because, this is going back to Gianola, utilized advertising and art so well in her designs that, like, these are pieces of art now, these beautiful glass bottles. Like, they go for so much money at, like, Tiffany's because they're this incredible, like, artisan creation process that went into the bottling.
Wow.
They're just works of art inside and out. But they've also got a lot of funky stuff. Like, they've got liqueurs. There's, like, a plum and a pear and a ginger liqueur. They've got a line of spritzes. And I don't mean, like a wine spritz. I mean, like, they look like perfume bottles, like little spritz bottles.
Huh.
And they're concentrated distillate and flavors. And they're meant to, you can spray them kind of like we would, like a atomizer on top of a cocktail to get a little, like, aromatics and flavors right on top.
Right.
But they also have a lot of suggestions for using them for food. Like, they've got, like, a light, bright ginger spritzer bottle that they're like, you can use this on sushi. It's very, very weird, but kind of cool. I mean, it's very cool. Yeah. Like, I would love to come across those. I don't think those are on the American market, but I think that's cool as shit.
Wow. Well, and I know that it's not, you know, it's not the kind of thing you want to run out and grab all the time, because it said that a bottle of a Amaro Nonino is about $50. So it's not a cheap product.
It's similarly priced to what you'd pay for a Campari or an Aperol. And I think, while I love both of those spirits, Nonino has, I think, a lot more flexibility in cocktailing because it doesn't have that such a strong bitter edge that you kind of have to work around it. Like, it's a lot more of an agreeable ingredient. So it's also one of those bottles that you're not going to use. You're not going to put 2 ounces of Nonino in most drinks. You're going to use,
quarter ounce,
maybe an ounce. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're building a paper plane, you're going to use an ounce. But still, that's a lot of pours from that bottle. So it is a little bit of a higher price point, but it is one where I would say it's worth it. And the things that it's on the same price point as, I think it outplays as far as how usable it is.
All right.
Yeah. And I mean, like, the awards speak for themselves. Like, I couldn't go into the amount of awards, both, like, International Spirit Awards, awards from the Italian government itself. Like, this is a highly awarded, highly beloved, highly celebrated family throughout time. Again, they've got their books, their comic books about them. There are classes taught on their entrepreneurship and innovation. Just a massively successful family business that is still in the family, which is just really cool. Because, you know, we talked a lot about brands. I mean, it started off in 1897. That's a long time for staying in family hands and having such a hands-on family, like, interaction.
Absolutely. You got to have people that are dedicated and want to see things done and done right to last that long.
Yeah.
Well, there's something I didn't know about.
Well, you should definitely, if you like Amari's, you should absolutely get yourself a bottle of Nonino. Or, you know what, start easy. Order a paper plane at a well-stocked bar, see if you like that, and go from there.
Well, now that I know we've got a bottle sitting here, I can make my own paper plane.
You do, because you probably have Aperol, too. I know I bought Aperol.
Oh, yeah, I know we either did or do, because I have seen it in there, so, you know.
Man, you can get that. You could. I don't think you could find Nonino in Huntington. I imported that for you.
But I can find Aperol, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to have to, now that dry January is over, and now that I have discovered this random expensive bottle of a drink that I'd never heard of in my cabinet, then I think I should make one.
I think you should too. I think you like bourbon drinks. It's a little, you know, because yeah. I know you don't like bitter drinks, but I think, I don't know, I think you like it. I like it. It's just like a big, it's just such a big drink. That's we talked about this last week, but that's what I like about Sam Ross's drinks. They're big drinks. They're like a paper plane is a big, juicy, it's got a lot of sweet, a lot of bitter, a lot of flavor. It's just a big ass drink. I love it. Not physically big, it's a fairly standard pour. Oh. Flavor wise, it's big.
Okay. Well, I've been described that way too, so that's for me.
I think you'd like it. And a bottle of Nonino will not go to waste on your shelf. If you have any tolerance for Amaro, I guarantee you'll like it. And, you know, if that's a little too much for you, you should check out the Aperitivo. I love it. I've had that one. I just have had is like a spritz, just, you know, or like a white wine spritz with that is delicious. It's very mixable. And I mean, again, like, you know, they've just got such a massive catalog. If you're fortunate enough to live somewhere where you have access to all of it, I'm a little jealous, because I live in New York City and I have not seen the full range of Nonino products. So and I have to go to Italy for that, I guess.
So instead of no Nanette, it's no Nini. I can't even say it now.
Wait, what?
Nonino. No Nino. That was what I was trying to say, and my tongue got stuck. No.
Never enough Nonino. Yes. Oh, that's right. We just talked about it making a no-no. What did we say that was? It was Nonino and...
But the one that I found, Nocino and...
Nocino and Nonino, yes.
Yeah, Nocino and Nonino, yeah.
Who knows if they go well together? They might. All right. Well,
I have to find I have to get me some more Nocino so I can make a no-no.
You know what? That's actually, I've had a hard time because that one bottle you got me was so good. The Watershed one was so good. Mm-hmm. I bought a bottle of Nonino that I found at my local liquor store, and it was a fancy brand, but it was not nearly as good as the one you sent me.
You mean the Nocino?
That's my favorite brands of
Watershed.
Nocino, yes.
You can order from Watershed. Yeah, they've got an online presence, and you can order their stuff from them.
Well, that's good to know, because that was the best. I mean, I've only had a few varietals of Nocino, but that was three, I think I can say, that I've tried. That was Head and Shoulders, my favorite.
Once you've had the best, there's no sense in getting the rest.
Yeah, I don't know. They just do it well. Well, and as far as things done well, again, I encourage you to check out Nonino. Check out the Paper Plane. Check out Grappa. Single origin grappa, whatever. Get into it. And thank you for being. Thank you, Dad, for being.
Well, thank you, Tay, for having me. I learned all about Nonino. All those No Nino things.
Talented family of badass ladies. And it's also cool that, you know, badass ladies and men that gave them space to be badass. Because, I mean, when we're talking something starting in the 1900s, that wasn't always the case. So, good.
That's right.
Good on you.
That's right. Get out of the distillery and back to the kitchen.
Yeah. let the lady run this. She did right by you. All right. Yeah, well, thank you all for joining us. Yeah, it's 5 foot tall, but, you know, that doesn't mean anything.
No, we've learned that in real life.
Sometimes the more concentrated a small woman is, the more dangerous.
That's right.
Well, thank you all for joining us. If you want to find us online, we are Neat Boozecast on Instagram. We are neatthebooscast@gmail.com. You can email us questions, thoughts, episode ideas. We are always appreciative for that. And if you want to join our Patreon, we got that. You get extra bonus content, rewards, all sorts of fun stuff. And if you want to talk about your experiences with either No Nino products or small and powerful ladies, you can do that
at Neat the Boozecast group page on Facebook. I monitor it on a regular daily basis. Yeah.
All right. Thanks again. I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been
Neat. I was trying to remember there was an old, I don't know whether it was a movie or what, but it was called No No Nanette. And I don't even remember who was in it or what it was about. And I was trying to tie that together with No Nino, and I was getting stuttering on it. No, 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 Nino. I couldn't get it going there. No, 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 Nino.
That happens sometimes. It's all right.
I felt like my tongue was going downhill.
That happens.